Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of Kentuckiana Grassroots Radio. As we wind down wrapping up a series of lectures I'm doing on apologetics and politics, simply put, apologetics is a defense of the Christian faith. Today, we are going to deal with God and justice. Basically, the political applications. Why is it that we need a Judeo-Christian worldview to back up, to be the foundation of a just government? Now, as I go about starting this series, I'm giving lectures. There's going to be some difficulties I've recently learned in keeping this recording, but I got to have faith and move on. And so as I'm lecturing, I'm really kind of going off of memory from various subjects. I had limited time to do these things, but I do feel like giving these audio lectures is a good way for people who might not be deep in the skill and discipline of reading, and give people some fresh talking points. The discipline of politics in our generation is one that does require an oral tradition anyhow. Typically, people learn politics on the fly. You listen to a radio, you listen to the news, you get the newest updates, and then you work it from there. We'll go into the deeper research and literature. We deal with references. You do research. You back up the research and the bibliography, and the bibliography has books that have another bibliography, and then also other references from there. And that's kind of the way academia takes things, and it takes a long time to really develop the ideas out in a way. Because of this, it is a slow process of verification upon verification, not only from a scientific perspective, but also from a historical perspective. Why is this? Well, essentially what we are doing is we are building up this large verification because that is the way that we obtain knowledge empirically. But the philosophical question of knowledge has many different turns and many different styles. Philosophy is not science, and science is not necessarily philosophy. But yet, science is also founded upon philosophy. Philosophy deals with logic. The science deals with facts. They both have to interact with each other, but they have their own frame of reference to start from. History deals with the past and what has been observed and recorded, much like science, and yet different because history is looking backwards while science looks forward. But yet history can look back better than science can look forward, and vice versa. Everything has different frames and different standing points, vantage points. Religion looks into mystery, looks into things that we don't know, and understands things from the starting point of that mystery, of that reaching forth or receiving from the great beyond. When we deal with the organized religion of Christianity, we're dealing with revelation. Revelation is knowledge that came from that mystery sector. And it is knowledge that we cannot obtain simply by science or simply by philosophy or history. These things are all put together and merged together. My philosophy, and I usually call it philosophy of science, but in general, is an epistemology, which means the way of understanding knowledge. It's an epistemology that I call biblical historical science. Then I start with revelation in the Bible. And then I move into logic. And I know it's not in the acronym. But I move into logic, Then I move into the area of history. And then I move into the area of science, followed by politics, and finally economics. This is a descending order. The most certainty I gain is from revelation. The least is from economics. Economics is ultimately encapsulated in human will. Revelation is ultimately encapsulated in truth, because it comes from an objective standpoint. The philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche had a similar division in the opposite direction. He believed in a will to power and a will to truth. He believed that we need to have a will to truth in order to stabilize society, but that we need the will to power in the sense that it was the greatest of all truths, down into the force of the will and the power and those primal urges. Mine goes the opposite way. I break these down into disciplines, and the ones that have the most will is the ones that have the least certainty, while the ones that have the most certainty in many ways can have the least willpower, because I'm looking for truth and not for power. And it is proper not to look for truth as opposed to just looking for power. Now, when we discuss the issues of politics, we are discussing the issue of power. Power comes from what? It comes from the will. And so as we start to develop these concepts, you have to understand what is proper for power. Now, the government, as we see it, I would argue, is the least helped by a government focused on power. A tyranny is a concentration of power where the governor is in total power. You think of Nebuchadnezzar and the kingdom of Babylon, which was actually an empire, meaning it's a kingdom over kingdoms. He exercised the most power and the most authority, but he did not have the best government. What do we need to have the best government? Well, let me start from a non-Christian foundation. Let me start with the ancient Greeks. The ancient Greeks noticed the concept of justice, and they had to develop this concept of justice. What was good for one was not good for the other. You have one person coming to power and he takes over everything and does everything his way. And people resent it. And so then someone else comes into power, but then the same thing happens. And then we have different versions of power. Perhaps instead of a monarchy, we need to deal with a republic. We need to have an oligarchy. Perhaps we even need to have a democracy. Ultimately, with all these different versions of government, we're arguing over the versions of justice. How do we obtain justice? How do we obtain a movement of willpower that satisfies us at a minimum, if not everyone, at a maximum? When they started looking into the issues of justice and the issues of politics, they noticed that it wasn't based on science. You could have someone who was knowledgeable over, you know, hundreds and many topics, okay, multitudes of issues. They can be academically trained. And yet when it comes to the moral will, they're just as susceptible to immorality as anyone else. They're just as susceptible to abuse. In our recent history, we deal with World War II, and the bad guys of World War II were the Nazis. And because they were destroyed, then everyone is able to freely critique them. Atheists will critique the Nazis. Christians will critique the Nazis. People in the middle will critique the Nazis. When the Nazis are here, not so much. It's always easier to look at the immorality, to look at the inconsistencies and the problems of the other party. And so we now look at the fossil of the Nazi Party, and we are able to see its limitations and see its weaknesses. So we start from there. And what do we find? We find that they were very scientifically advanced, ingenious in many levels, capable of so much progress in the areas of science. Therefore, did it make them moral? Did it make them good? And on this level, they are universally condemned. Why? Because they had their list of undesirables, and they would destroy those who were undesirable. And not only would they destroy the undesirables, but they would destroy their competitors. They found the Jews, the cultural competitors with the Germans, so they destroyed them. They found the handicap, to be lower on the evolutionary chain, so they destroyed them. They found the superstitious or overly religious to be not up to their par, so they destroyed them. And in this cycle, we see immorality. We see an inability to have mercy, an inability to have compassion. And so we say, hey, they are immoral. They are not good. Now, immoral is not necessarily knowledge. Having a lot of knowledge is amoral. It is simply a tool. But it does not make you moral, aka good. It just is indifferent. And an evil person can take knowledge and use it for its evil purposes, evil, destructive purposes. But how do we know what morality is? Now, as I said, the Greeks, when they dealt with this, they realized that justice was immaterial. In other words, there is no physical thing called justice. There's not a liquid, a pill, you know, nothing physical that you could just, like, digest or something that was justice. They understood that in the world of the mind, there are things that are not material. They are immaterial. They're like sleep. We are not active in the physical world, but we are active in our dreams and active in an immaterial sense. And so there is an immaterial reality. When we deal with justice, then we are dealing with a foundation that is both moral and spiritual. It is not an issue that is physical. So the Nazis were not moral because the Nazis were materialists. They lived in a purely evolutionary worldview and frame. Now, they believed in a God. And a God was not monotheistic. This God was pantheistic. Okay? They believed in some sort of spiritual essence, a zeitgeist of some sort, and it was the nature itself, the forces of nature working themselves out. And what they dealt with was this spiritual physicality, but it was all physicality, it was all material. And so it was an evolutionary view. Nature was part of the earth, and the earth was immortal. That means it was infinite. And so they would work from there. But in this evolutionary frame, this physicality frame, they didn't have a physical good or a physical bad, because it was all physical, it was all material. And justice is immaterial. And so as the Greeks would develop their philosophies, they would develop virtues under the philosophy of Plato and Aristotle. The physical world as a worldview, what we call materialism, and to a degree, atheism, was brought up prior to Socrates among the pre-Socratic philosophers.
and yet it failed. In fact, it was laughed out because the immaterial world, the material world was not one that you could gain any certainty about. Even when we think about the material world, it has to be governed by something immaterial. It's governed by the laws of science. The laws of science, just like the laws of justice, are what? Not physical. They control the physical. But there is something immaterial, too. And so, out of the materialistic world, based off of what we call the atom, where all material is the same, if you break it down far enough, to that indivisible atom, fails. Utterly fails as worldview. They would try to reformulate it. They would break everything down first to just the atom, but then they divide it more, so they would break it down to the elements. They would have two elements, then five elements. Later on in science, we have the periodic table with over 100 elements. But if it's not material, and if it's not material, then there has to be an immaterial thing which upholds everything. And so as we found what we thought was the atom, okay, the atom that we found in the 1800s turned out to be divisible. That's why we have atomic bombs, because we can divide the atom. Therefore, the atom is not indivisible. Therefore, everything is not material. And it shouldn't be, because there is science. There is laws of science. There's things that act in a certain way, and they always act in a certain way, but what makes them act in a certain way? A unmoved mover, if there are moving things. Everything in the universe is moving according to time. Everything is in a state of change. But it can only be in a state of change if there is something that is causing the change that is not changing along with it. If you're in a pool and your friends want to run around that pool and start a whirlpool, you have to have the people in the pool running around the pool to move the water. If you're not there, the water does not move. So there has to be an unmoved mover. So we start developing concepts that would eventually lead to God and monotheism. This was not necessarily the God of the Bible, because they were Gentiles and because they were pagans and heathens, and so they just did not operate in those concepts. But yet, they knew that they had to have some sort of founding, some sort of connection, some sort of relationship with the God of the universe. And ultimately, they would all search out and they would find that in the Jews. And then, as providence would have it, the Jews shifted into a new religion with a new relationship, because they had historically obtained the Messiah at just the right time. And so now, as we see this Messiah, who we know as the historical Jesus Christ, that is the intellectual shift that would permeate even through times of persecution throughout the world of the Gentiles. Christianity would permeate because they needed that Messiah. They needed that God for the very fabric of society. In order to have a just society, they needed to have a just God. One God. Not many orders, but one order. One truth. One knowledge. And these are those foundations. As they would develop this, they would develop an understanding of spirituality and an understanding of justice. As they started to work these out among the nations, Christianity would permeate. Christianity would influence the Gentile nations. Well, the Gentile way would also permeate and infect what was Christianity, and it would become Christendom. Or, to be more mocking as I am, Christendom. The ways of Gentile, the ways of the pagan society would infiltrate that religion in a time period we call the Holy Roman Empire. But there was a nation that was semi-unique. And I say semi-unique in the fact that it was plagued with those same problems, and yet it overcame some issues. And that nation was the nation of England. And in the nation of England, they would work out their issues of justice. How do we have justice? You would have the monarchies. And the monarchies operated as an ultra-thick society. Now, how did government evolve? How did government get started? And how did it get to this point? Well, basically, God had created mankind in the same way he says in the book of Genesis. And the first man had the ultimate tyranny. Okay, I mean, we'll say it was a monarchy, but it was also a tyranny because he fell in sin. That is Adam. He had governance over all the earth, and all, not only mankind, but all animal kind was in subjection to him. He was the perfect man. Until he made an imperfect decision, which brought sin and death upon the realm of mankind. Now, when he fell spiritually, he lost spiritual dominance. And so he did not have the same sovereignty over the animal world that he used to have. And so man would have to work by the sweat of his brow, Scripture says. And from dust he came, and to dust he will return. And so now man has to fight to domesticate some of creation. Well, man needed more power. Man needed more work because what? Man had a nature to have dominion over the earth. That is a part of man's design. But how is he going to acquire power? Well, he noticed that when he raised his children, he could obtain their service. So he would have more than one child, he would have many children. Because many children meant that he had a fatherhood that was much greater. And then he said he noticed that while there were limitations of children that he could obtain from his wife, he could obtain more wives. And from more wives, he would have more children. And he would develop tribes, and he would have tribal powers. But then he also noticed that he could also acquire other people to labor for him as his servant. And so he would acquire other people as property, and that was through slavery. And that was the slave system. He would obtain them. Maybe they owed a debt. Maybe they were considered criminals. But he would somehow obtain sovereignty over them. So each patriarch would obtain his wives, his children, and his slaves. And eventually they would protect themselves, and they would set up their own militia, and they would become a nation. And so this is the origin of nations. And it would only be natural to move from a tribe to a nation to a kingdom to an empire, because it is the natural progress of dominion. However, this is where competition starts. This is where the abuse starts. And so you have the abuse of all these nations. Now, fast forward back to ancient England. And what we have is we have an understanding of justice. Now, there was a king named King Alfred, King Alfred the Great. And what did this king do? He would establish morality and law. He had a vision that would be of uniting kingdoms. Hence, we have the United Kingdom. Now, I watched a series on Netflix, and you have to be careful about historical fiction. So, being the fact that I'm not going from... I have looked up a lot of legitimate histories, but, you know, with fictional histories, it's somehow kind of like a blur. You know, some of it's a little bit of interpretation, and some of it is historical fact. But I don't know if it was really his vision to have a United Kingdom, but it does seem to be something he would agree to. If the historical King Alfred were here, he would definitely agree to that. But he started in operation. First, he believed in the Christian God. And since he believed in the Christian God and monotheism, he believed that there was one true morality. And so when he started his nation, his kingdom and understanding of justice, he got a monk to work with him as his intellectual assistant. That was the Venerable Bede. And they made their laws in English as opposed to Latin. Okay, so as opposed to that melting pot of pagan tradition and biblical tradition, they pretty much kind of started over. And so in starting over, he wrote in English, and he wrote down his doom's laws, and doom is a word for judgment. These are the judgments of law, okay? So the doom's laws got published, and they started with Moses. And Moses and the Ten Commandments. They also had several passages out of Exodus and Deuteronomy that would help establish justice alongside what's called Saxon law and the tradition of the Saxons, because he was first king of the Saxons. And these would develop over time. And in the 1100s, England had been united, and they developed what was called British Common Law. These would be laws that were worked out through the systems of the courts. So they weren't just the revelation, but they were applied to everyday living and everyday life. And what happened was these biblical laws would pass the test of time. And so you had what was called the British Common Law. And when we look forward in the times of Protestantism and the age of the Enlightenment, we have philosophies that are developed. John Locke was considered one of the top philosophers of the 1600s, and many of the Americans looked up to him. But it wasn't just John Locke. There was a guy, I forgot that guy's name. But basically he was a Scottish philosopher. I think his last name was Thomas. Could have been his first name. And I don't believe it's the same as Thomas Paine, but Thomas Paine is in there. He's also an effect of this. And they had what was called common sense realism. So when we refer to Jefferson and we refer to the 8th of the Bill of Rights, the first 8 amendments of the Constitution, these are enshrined by the 9th Amendment. The 9th Amendment puts these as permanent. And so as we look at these amendments, we find the 7th one puts in a foundation. The justice system works according to the common law. The common law would be the common sense. And what is common sense? It's referring back to that universal knowledge of a universal morality. How do we have a universal knowledge and universal morality? A morality that fits all, a one size fits all for knowledge and morals? Well, first of all, knowledge has to be morally good. It cannot be a lie, which is morally bad. And so the knowledge has to have a moral foundation. In other words, why would you obtain knowledge or keep knowledge or even keep knowledge to be knowledge? And so we have this bounding and this foundation coming in that common sense, which is really founded on that idea that persevered the common law, which was commonly understood through, what was the source? Revelation. So we have a common law. Our country right now is starting to get unhinged because it's totally lost this concept. Even among conservatives, they don't have a clue of what I'm talking about because they'll bring up things like free speech, freedom of religion, okay, and then they deal with the homosexual issue. Oh, well, freedom of religion. That's a weak argument. And they'll be like, oh, well, I'll tell you what, 10th Amendment, states' rights, there you go. Okay, but we're still not hitting it. The common law is where we should have been hitting. But that has been erased from our educational system and erased from our history. The greatest thing about the perpetration of evil is that you can use ignorance by stopping education. School system teaches evil by not teaching good and erasing history so that you will not be reminded of history and not base your opinions off of education. And this has been part of the plan of public school education. It's to destroy knowledge, to keep out the knowledge of things that are absolutely necessary. So we have that Judeo-Christian foundation. And so we see that Judeo-Christian foundation being destroyed. Even in our understanding of humanity, if we do not believe what humanity is, if we do not agree on what humanity is, then how can we govern humanity? Am I to understand that a man is just an ape? Well, then how do I treat an ape? Well, I'd say that an ape is an animal, and it might demand some sort of care, but I can keep that animal in a cage as long as I want to because it has no real purpose. It is, at the end of the day, just an animal. Even if I am a big animal rights activist and I love that ape, what is that ape going to do? Stand that ape to be nothing more than an ape. That ape is not going to be writing any books anytime soon. That ape has no purpose. It's just there for my entertainment. It is not what I understand a human to be. If I understand that a human is not only a creature, but has a spark of the divine, a spark of infinity, and spark of morality and justice, then I understand it to have far more good. When we started incorporating ideas of evolution into our culture, then we started incorporating evil. When we deal with the concepts of slavery, one of the biggest arguments from the political left against America and against our Protestant foundation is the concept of slavery. If you understand the context of scriptures, this makes a whole lot more sense. But you have been, if you are just a normal American, you've been raped to that concept. Totally had it ripped out from you from a young age. You were lost of its innocence. Slavery was a concept in the Old Testament, but it was a concept that was different than what we perceived in the 1800s slavery. For instance, slavery was not something that was identical to kidnapping. Men stealing was a sin early in the book of Genesis. It was not moral, it was not good, it was not allowable, it was criminal. You had property over your own body, you had property over yourself. Slavery was not allowable as men stealing from the start. Your freedoms could not be ripped from you. Slavery was something in which you gave up your freedom. You gave up your freedom because you owed a debt that you could not pay. You gave up your freedom because you were a criminal. You gave up your freedom because you were fighting a war against an enemy, and now your enemy had taken possession of you for trying to end their existence. This is what slavery was then, and it was not a moral virtue of the Old Testament. It was dealing with reality. Much of the Old Testament is not trying to perfect man. The law was not out there to perfect man. It was simply to punish man's evil. And it was setting boundaries over the previous freedom because of sin. And so slavery was a result of sin. It was not a result of living godly or moral or virtuous or anything like that. Same thing dealt with polygamy. There are certain limitations of polygamy that are in the Old Testament, but it is ultimately allowable because ultimately man was free to do as he pleased until his freedom started encroaching upon others. And so if man wanted to have a certain relationship and they weren't going to fight you about it or they weren't hurting people or something, well, then you dealt with it. But eventually they would want more and more until it became an issue. So some people were happy in polygamous relationships. But Jesus Christ points out how that is not the ideal. And this is what we deal with mankind. They want to push the envelope and push it further and further. I have my freedoms, I have my rights. Right now there's a big push, and a lot of conservatives are calling for this, about the legalization of marijuana. Now I understand some of these arguments, some of them are rational arguments. Should it be a felony versus just illegal? Should it, you know, cannot we use it for medicinal purposes? Well, when we talk about medicinal purposes, we're not doing it out of recreation. And so when it comes to a moral issue, it's one thing to have an expert give you just enough for your physical health to deal with a physical issue. Another thing, when you are taking to feed your flesh, when you are getting yourself intoxicated, it is always wrong. And if you are getting yourself intoxicated and the lifestyle becomes addiction, it is wrong. I know people have become addicted to marijuana. I know it has been a torture on them. And I also know that the people who are fighting for marijuana are fighting in a way for marijuana because they have a need for that drug. And what's worse, is I know that it is a gateway because society then moves from fulfilling its needs one way to fulfilling its needs another. When the marijuana does not get them high enough, but it's gotten them into a getting high lifestyle, then they move from point A to point B and they get into other drugs. So they say, well, I believe that marijuana is a better drug than some of the intoxicating drugs that they're over-prescribing in the medical community, like OxyContin. Okay, so marijuana is better than those drugs. I can concede to that point, but that would only make those drugs immoral. That only makes the doctor who over-prescribes painkillers immoral. You have to stay away from that style because you are getting into a lifestyle of addiction. And then that lifestyle of addiction turns into greater addiction like heroin, and now we have this epidemic. This is the flesh. This is human nature, and justice has to operate knowing that human nature wants to do great evil that ends up in destruction of itself and others. There needs to be parameters to freedom. There needs to be different levels of these parameters. This much is true. When I look at a country like Saudi Arabia, Saudi Arabia will have much similar moralities that I will have, or let's say principles. They'll say, we don't want our women whoring around. I agree. I don't think women should whore around, creating illegitimate babies, breaking up families, getting sexually transmitted diseases, encouraging drug abuse, being the products of drug abuse, encouraging slavery. No, I'm not into prostitution. I don't think that helps out society. So much of its aims, I mean, some of its aims I'm going to disagree with because they have other abuses too that contradict because they have shifted from a biblical foundation to the Quran foundation. But the biggest problem is not simply that they have their set of virtues, but that they operate it through tyranny. So in Saudi Arabia, they'll say, you shouldn't drink, and we will beat you down if we find you drunk. Well, you should not drink. You should be punished for abusive drunkenness because we don't want you killing somebody when you, A, get into a fight, B, get into an auto accident, or C, get into other forms of trouble. But in causing such violence, what are you doing? You're encouraging other groups of men to become more violent. Now you have death squads. Now you got more mafia. Okay? So the use of power is another issue within biblical Christianity that we have to attain to. You can only go so far with your power because power corrupt. And so Saudi Arabia is a very corrupt nation because of its abuse of power more than its ignorance of virtues, even though it does ignore several virtues. It creates some evil that way because of a massive amount of evil because it abuses power on a massive scale. Now, we have this concept of justice. We believe that justice should be for all. This is a Christian understanding. And the American way of life is based upon Christian principles. It is not a theocracy. And in fact, it is recognized as being against theocracy. Most of the Roman Catholic Church operated in a way that was mixed with heathen or pagan concepts. This much is true. They borrowed a lot from Plato and Aristotle, and unfortunately other groups and other ways of people. They would commit many pagan festivals and things of that nature. But just like the Muslims, the primary issue is not just deviation on these virtues. The primary issue was tyranny and power. And over the period of 500 years, 50 million people were killed in the Inquisition. That the Roman Catholic Church, the Holy Roman Catholic Church, just to be accurate, okay, because we know that, you could argue about modern Catholicism versus old Catholicism, but that's not the point. The medieval Catholic Church abused power, just like the Muslim empires. And when you abuse power, then you take your own sins and then you impose it on others. And so that was the way things happened. And that's why there had to be a Protestant Reformation, but even more importantly, that's why there had to be an America. Because that theocratic style was infiltrating even England. And so the Church of England did a lot of atrocities on its own because it was mimicking the style of the Roman Catholic Church. And the Roman Catholic Church had its own understanding of morality and law, and they had this system that they would call canon law. And by the way, the Roman Catholic Church has a lot of immorality and paganism that has created many evils. But these evils were enhanced by the humanist movement. In other words, the old Catholicism is nothing compared to the new Catholicism. Because the new Catholicism put in humanistic principles and liberalism. And Protestants who were following in this humanism and humanistic liberalism would follow suit as well. So we have to go back to these foundations of justice and law. When we deal with the slave trade, the slave trade was not just the Old Testament concept of slavery. Now, the Confederacy of the South was operating because it was allowed by Reformers and Methodists of those types, that mainline Protestantism. They allowed for slavery under the idea of a biblical slavery that the Jews had in the Old Testament. But the perpetrators of the slave trade were not under a biblical view. When the slave trade went on among the Africans, there was a couple things that were at play. Number one, the slave trade was ultimately started by the Muslims and the Arabs. In the majority of the slave trade, you had, of course, the men being traded off to normal slavery and many women being traded off to normal slavery, but the majority of slaves, well, let's see here. I'll split it up a little bit, but basically a lot of it was prostitutes that were sold to Arabia. The Arabs were taking in a lot of African women as whores. They would kidnap them and force them into prostitution. Then, when we move forward, the understanding was being affected by the Enlightenment. And a lot of people don't know this, but the ideas of evolution didn't start with Charles Darwin. Evolution was a pagan concept of animals and elements turning into people. Then it got refined, and Darwin was not the first. His grandfather, Erasmus Darwin, espoused a very similar concept 30 years before him. And there was also a guy named Lamarck, okay, and Lamarck, which where we get the word of Lamarckism, was the early evolutionary concept. But there are records of people even in the 1700s proposing that man had come from apes. And I had read a biography of an incredible woman of God, female black slave in the 1800s, who was part of the abolitionist movement. And her name was titled, she renamed herself Sojourner Truth. And Sojourner Truth had been called an ape 30 years prior to Darwin. This was a common harassment. And many of the lawyers in her autobiography, she says many of the lawyers said that she was not human and therefore she was not as intelligent as the white people and she could not handle freedom. Because she was not as intelligent as the white people. After all, she was from Africa and evolved from apes. This is what they told her. And she would argue back with the Bible, but what was interesting was that she was illiterate, as was most of slave society. Why were they not, quote, winning those IQ tests? Because they were not educated. And so they had a pony. They take these, you know, whites who are taught to read and taught literacy and taught mathematics, and then they compare them to a slave who's only been forced to do labor and nothing else. Now, some of the slaves, don't get me wrong, they would educate themselves. But in general, it was pretty hard to get that way in society. And even if you did have the education, you might not want to express that at that time period because you might get punished for it. So this was a horrible time of oppression, and they would use the ideas of evolution to further their cause of slavery. When we dealt with a irreligious society, we look at the French Revolution, a revolution made by atheists, and ultimately led to 40,000 beheadings. Not just other deaths, but alone 40,000 beheadings. And you deal with the tyranny from that. What was the name of that French general? Napoleon. That was our first major atheistic society since the time of the pre-Socrates. Then you deal with Karl Marx and the ideas that spur forth from various forms of socialism. Nazism, fascism, and communism. All forms of socialism. They borrowed somewhat from Marx. Obviously, the communists were the most close to Marx. But ultimately, and you could also borrow a little bit from Rousseau. However, these big government utopian society models would all fall apart because they denied humanity. And so they would have their form of slavery. I mean, it was definitely a form of slavery. And in fact, many of these forms of slavery were much more violent than what we saw with the evils of the Confederacy. It is important to notice that. They try to make the Confederacy out to be the most evil of all societies for propaganda. Yet, that was not the most evil society. Okay? If they were the most evil society, then you wouldn't have gone from 300,000 slaves to 40 years later, 4 million slaves. In other words, they had families, and they reproduced at a rate 14 children a family. Maybe not exactly. I'm not doing exact numbers today. But basically, you have this rapid reproduction. Now, in the South of America, not the American South, but in the continent of South America, you had a genocide of blacks. And it was a genocide not by the gun, but by the way of life, okay? 96% of all slaves in the African slave trade were outside of America. Maybe that's 94%. They were outside of America. And the majority of those went to South America. And their generations died on a massive scale. So even in the American South, that was an evil, but it was not as great an evil because it was not permeated with the godless evolution as much, except for many of these slaveholders, these aristocrats, you know, the higher society of the South is where you got that. And the higher society of the South was the slave owners. 20% of the Confederacy was slave owning. 80% were not slave owning. Another issue was just abuse from the North, who, by the way, did the slave trade. So the liberals would do the slave trade and slave owning, and they blame the rest of America on it. And there's a lot of stuff to go over there. I did a video series on it a long time ago. But anyhow, when we look at what is really in the Bible, Acts 17:26, where the blood of all men is coming from Adam, that we are one blood. That means that humanity is one race. Okay, as far as when we understand what a race is of animals, we are one race. Okay, we're not just one species, we are one race. And we all have rights. When Lincoln coined the phrase, "In God we trust," it was because the unifying aspect of America during the Civil War, the one thing that brought every state back together. They're finally brought unity to the nation that was desperately needed. It was the unity under God. And that unity under God kept us together as a nation, and then it rose up America so that America would defeat the greatest nations in the world to preserve the world. World War One, we got involved with. World War Two, we really won. And that spread democracy across the world. It didn't make the world perfect or anything like that. There's still plenty of evil and yada yada. But it was the fact that God had raised up America to save the world. And that's really what you had. Communism and Nazism taking over the world would not have ended well for human society. Imagine what if it was Hitler versus Stalin in a global nuclear war. Do you think that's how things should have ended up? No. So this is the conquered. This is the justice that comes out from the biblical society. And we need America to stay in line with some of those basic presuppositions. When we stop understanding life is what God made it, what do? Well, we abort over 60 million babies. Because we don't have to watch them snap the necks of infants. No, we can just hide them in our dumpsters. When we talk about human decency, we can always say, well, that was just criminals that we put in jail, all the victims of drugs, and other things of that nature. That is what's happening to our society because it's leaving those foundations. When we leave marriage, why have we destroyed marriage? Because marriage is the nucleus of a family, and a family is independent of the culture. Families can get by on their own, but the socialists don't need a government. They don't need a culture free from the government. They need a culture dependent on the government. And so the whole world of socialism is dependent. It makes dependent people. It makes enslaved people going on in our culture right now. And it's why we're losing. And so they destroyed the concept of marriage almost completely. But with God, all things are possible. That's why we have to restore marriage. That's why it took breaking the Constitution by the Supreme Court and other courts in order to subvert this. These courts are breaking the law. They know they're breaking the law. And why are they doing it? So they can break us and march for the truth. Because if we don't, then the only truth that we will know is the truth in heaven. After we die, if we are saved. God bless you. We'll catch you later on Tech Angry Radio.